talks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal, come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Lily Tomlin. The actress and comedian has a long string of awards for her work in television, film, and the theater, including Emmys, Tonys, a Grammy, and 2 Peabody Awards. But perhaps less known, Lily Tomlin has a similarly distinguished record in the realm of animal welfare. We'll discuss that along with some performances she's doing at the moment, including tomorrow, April 3rd, at the Tampa Theater, and a new Netflix series on the horizon. Let me speak with Lily Tomlin in just a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in today's show, we'll have a brief conversation with Ken D'Onofrio of the Animal Coalition of Tampa about the organization's fundraising dinner happening this Saturday, Spaghetti and No Balls, you heard me, and a milestone they recently reached in spay-neuter procedures. Also later, Name That Animal Tune will offer as the prize a pair of tickets to see Amos Lee Saturday at Ruth Eckert Hall. Right now, though, let's hear an animal song. This is new music from Quilt with Arctic Shark on Talking Animals.
Proceed with ease. This eastern harbor's full of grief. All my heavy dreams are simply a luxury. The horses in the pepper tree and the lighthouse floating in the sea. Newborn forms are weightless like dust. Everything will regenerate.
That was Quilt with Arctic Shark, a lovely new animal tune to get us started this morning. Let's move right into it now with our chat with Lily. With a reminder, we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmf.org, or texting us at 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Lily Tomlin to Talking Animals. Good morning, Lily.
Hi, Duncan. How are you?
I'm very good. Now, if I were to start out by asking, is this the party with whom I'm speaking, would that instantly end the interview?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Okay.
No.
That's good. So I want to, you know, in a few minutes, I'll probably circle back to elephants because I think we, seems like we share a mild obsession for those majestic creatures. But just want to travel back a little bit further, maybe even a lot further first. I mean, clear images I have probably that my first awareness of you as Edith Ann talking about her dog Buster and what Buster likes to do, Buster likes to eat. But I get the sense that offstage you've had kind of a lifelong love affair with animals. What was life like as a kid? How important were animals in your family back then?
Well, they were like I don't know if I can, you know, really analyze it with any kind of overview, because as a kid you just kind of take your dogs and cats for granted, I think.
Sure, but some families don't.
All kids have animals.
Well, actually, some families do or don't. Some parents aren't all that animal friendly, so some kids don't have.
I'm saying. But from a child's perspective, you think, well, my mother and father are both Southern, too, so I also had the Southern experience with animals, farm animals and stuff, so I was sort of appalled or very early on at, you know, the callousness that maybe outdoor people treated animals in some instances. I mean, I've seen dogs tied up, you know, as a child, hunting dogs tied up for days and living in the barn. And, of course, I've seen cats living freely on the barn and infant cats come back and be killed by the tom, which I've always heard was the story, to put the female cat back into estrus. I've seen little kitties picked up by their, you know, bitten throats and just thrown into a field. And, of course, I would cry and sob and bury each one of them. And I was just overcast. I watched my aunts wring the neck off a chicken for supper. So it was pretty grim. Maybe these are things that an animal show don't even want to get into.
No, I mean, I think that part of the point of a show like this is to sort of discuss the realities, the good, the bad, the ugly.
I was horrified at a lot of stuff I would see on the farm.
And was this back in...
everybody took for granted.
And was this back in Michigan? Sorry for interrupting a little bit.
Kentucky, in the south. Rural Kentucky.
Okay, because I thought you were raised, I thought your folks
were
from Kentucky.
Every summer I went there to visit my aunts, my grandmother, and everyone. And it was really a true farm life. I mean, they farmed, they milked, they raised tobacco. They were farmers, and so that there was no there might be a house pet that people made over, but not very much, and you'd never have the dog or cat sleeping in the bed with you.
So very different sort of a situation than
and this is many decades ago.
Sure. Yeah, generational changes amongst other things, and regional ones too.
I doubt my cousins hold similar views anymore, younger newer generation, hopefully more like me. You know, I get out and give the bed to the dog.
That's right. Give your own bed to the dogs,
right,
if need be. Yeah. So let me let folks know who might just be tuning in. If you are just tuning in, my guest is Lily Tomlin, who will be performing tomorrow night at the Tampa Theater. If you'd like to ask Lily a question or offer a comment, you can call 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. So what sort of animals have been part of your household over the years once you sort of moved beyond kind of the early years you just described?
Well, I would have a different life in Detroit anyway. I might have, you know, an animal, and I'm thinking now, sort of shamefacedly, I'm thinking, well, what did we do with our animals when we went to the country? I guess my dad was home, and he must have taken care of them. Now, my dad was a sweet, kind of soft-hearted guy, and I think he was always kind of partial to our animals. But as I'm recalling now, I'm thinking, if I went to my relatives in the summer, I know we had dogs and cats all through our childhood. I'm thinking, I hope they were cared for. I mean, I know they weren't let run wild. My mother would never do that. So my dad must have cared for them. They weren't necessarily outdoor animals either, because we lived in an apartment house, and you couldn't very well do that easily. So my childhood animals must have been fairly well cared for. From my own remembrance, of course, I was totally devoted. But as I say, when I recall the facts, I can't quite figure out maybe what transpired every single day. My mother and dad both being, country people, in a sense, they didn't have a fanatical attachment to the animals. I can remember our dog Chi-Chi always sitting on the couch with my dad, so he must have been fairly close to that dog. But my own cats and dogs, of course, I was crazy about them, but I took them for granted.
Yeah,
I think I took for granted that my mother took care of them, because I don't remember being obligated to feed them. or not, but at whatever point I turned the corner, when I had more sense, I became completely, you know, pretty deeply devoted to those animals and ones I've had in the interim.
And can you mark a certain turning point where you did?
Well, I can, but it's fairly gruesome. I almost hate to even bring it up.
But, okay.
Well, my mom, bless her, she was a wonderful woman. But as I say, she was raised on a farm, so she probably had at some point, because she was the care of the animals was always left to her, and I was forever bringing home a stray and just assuming that we would take it into the house. And at one point, I remember my mother sending one of our cats to the Humane Society. I think she, it's gruesome. I don't even want to bring it up, Duncan.
Okay. All right. Well, I think, you know, perhaps enough said. on this side of things.
Well, I will say I tried to call and get the cat back, and of course I was not able to.
All right, that sounds like kind of a scarring recollection. Well, so let's move into to.
This was more than you were expecting.
No, well, that, you know, you don't know yet what
well,
you're going to.
I'm remembering horrible stories. Don't let me think of them.
Okay, well, let's move on to something warmer, fuzzier, at least more current. So what sort of critters currently occupy the Tomlin Wagner household?
Well, right now I have two cats. I have Murphy, my one cat that is about 19 now. She had glaucoma, and one of her eyes had to be removed a long time ago. She did extremely well. I wanted to encourage listeners who might hear this and be horrified at the idea of removing one of your cat's eyes. I finally was persuaded to do so, that she was not comfortable under this situation, and she's been like a kitten. She never, it's been 10 years or 8 years or something, and she's done extremely well and doesn't seem to miss the eye at all. I mean, she jumps as much as she ever did, and she never seems to be confused about where she is or where she should go or anything. That turned out well. And then I'm fostering a cat, and I've been keeping that cat at my office because Murphy's so old. She's 19, as I said, and so possessive and territorial. Our other cat, Roddy, who was named after Roddy McDowell, because he was so sensitive. He was so sweet. We used to call him Christ Cat. He was so so giving and kind.
Wow, that's pretty exalted. Yeah,
he was, and she, Murphy wasn't even very nice to Roddy for all those years, and he died just last year. So I haven't had a dog for a few years because Princess, this dog I had rescued on the street, she when she died, Murphy and Roddy were I felt that they just weren't ready for another animal to come in. As I say, Murphy was being unkind to Roddy. I mean, not unkind in a physical, but more of a psychic way. She could vibe him out of a room.
Yeah, well, and again, you know, when a cat gets to be 19, and apart from the eye that obviously was removed some years ago, I mean, how is Murphy doing? I mean, that's...
She's wonderful. She really, truly, she's also a long hair. We keep her cut because she had a lot of trouble with hairballs. And I feel like this is Dr. Tomlin.
Well, when you have a cat that old, you become
issues.
Yeah, you become sort of a de facto vet when you have a cat that old. Yeah, we've had a couple old ones, and so I guess no kidney issues, because that's the other thing that seems to come up with
a little bit. But okay, I haven't even thought of this because because we do it so as a matter of fact. But we hydrate her every day.
Okay, with fluids, with the yeah okay.
She seems to be great. I mean, it's. She doesn't seem to really be enabled, disabled in any way at all.
That's
she
great.
Just takes it for granted, this the hydration.
Well, that really does seem to revive cats that are that age, even if they don't have a particularly rough kidney situation at that moment. Just does put a spring in their step. So, Lily, at what point in your career, given this sort of arc that we've almost covered a little bit, at least with animals, did you start speaking on their behalf? Because that seems like kind of a notable part of your career for a good number of years at this point.
I couldn't say. I just happened to know many people who were active or had groups, and I would always lend my name or write letters or speak of it when I am able to in an interview or make an appearance or fundraiser or something. I never headed up any group. as so many of my friends have.
But there wasn't like then a particular catalyst where you said, you know what, I feel this way about animals and I'm being interviewed a lot and obviously getting a higher profile, so I'm going to start talking about this aspect of animals or talking about their behalf. It just sort of kind of gradually unfolded, it sounds like.
Yeah, it did gradually unfold. I think I took it for granted that people would, that people loved animals and that they cared for them as they would any living creature.
And so, along those lines, you're on the board of directors for, of actors and others for animals. I had the pleasure of speaking with Fred Willard a few months ago, and he sort of touched a bit on the organization and its history, but maybe you could sort of address more specifically its mission today as guided by you and your fellow board members.
Well, first, spaying and neutering and doing as much as you can in that direction for domestic animals. Joanne Worley, who's the president, of course, is a good friend from Laffin and has for many years. And I think education is a big factor and just doing as much as you can in that department to raise awareness.
Is there any trickiness navigating through the different viewpoints held by board members? For example, if I'm not mistaken, I think one of the board members is Betty White, who adore at least as much as the next guy. But I think she's pretty passionately pro-zoo.
Very pro-zoo.
While others on the board, you, for example, may have a less enthusiastic view of zoos.
No, I'm in West Palm Beach right now, and when I got off the plane, it was a great big sign, you know, about going and enjoying yourself at the West Palm Beach Zoo. And I thought, even West Palm Beach has a zoo. It's unbelievable. And it was a bit distressing.
Well,
a good friend of mine was going to go elephant riding in Botswana, and I thought, I read that in the paper. I didn't have it told to me directly.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised. Some people's conscious, you know, they're more conscious in one area, and they have blind spots in other areas.
Yeah, blind spots is a real area I'm interested in on this show, because we all sort of shake our blind spots, or many of us do at different times, but you grow up a certain way or you live in a certain place or there's a certain cultural influence. Next thing you know, you don't see anything wrong with, you know, zoos or horse racing. Yeah, I grew up that way. That's the one I'll cop to. So, yeah, sometimes it's really hard to shake it if that's just the way you were sort of spent your time growing up. Yeah, okay, well, so discussing zoos sort of delivers us in a way to elephants in terms of, obviously, you developed a few years ago, I guess, a real interest in elephants because, gosh, man, it was probably about 5 or 6 years I started noticing stories about Lily Tomlin speaking out, urging the release of elephants from the Woodland Park Zoo in Seattle, and I think Jenny from the Dallas Zoo and Packy from the Oregon Zoo, and it's like, wow, this has definitely become a huge, important issue for you. How did that sort of come about?
Well, I think largely it happened when they were trying to free Billy and Ruby from the LA Zoo and get them to a sanctuary. And a friend that I knew was very active in that protest. And I wrote a letter to Mayor Villarosa, but I had to read a lot about elephants. I mean, I had a certain consciousness, but I didn't know very much about the facts of elephants in captivity. So as I read and became more and more interested, I just, I felt like it suddenly, I guess the elephant started to symbolize the elephant, you know, in the room or the elephant on the planet or something.
Okay.
Because I thought, it's just so patently obvious that these animals, the AZA's, guideline for an elephant in captivity was a space equal to a 3-car garage.
Right. We should point out, that's sort of the governing body that oversees zoos and aquariums, and they kind of set the standards for how those animals are displayed,
and
I guess.
Thought, well, yeah. And, of course, the AZA is held up as the light. Well, my God, it's AZA approved. How much more do you want?
Yeah, very official. Very official. Yeah.
Right. And it's really just a trade organization, you know, to a cheerleader for aquariums and zoos. And so the idea that an AZA guideline so fundamentally was saying that the space for an elephant captivity need be only as equivalent to a 3-car garage, that you start thinking, well, I don't want to be aligned. I certainly, anything that's aligned with the AZA can't be okay.
Yeah, they're, once you look at the sort of what, as you say, they're a trade group, and as we know, elephants are huge kind of marquee attractions, so they're not going to do anything to limit or discourage the exhibition of elephants.
And this campaign was successful in getting Ruby transferred to up north to Paws in California.
Yeah.
And then I became friendlier and friendlier with Pat Derby and Ed Stewart, who founded, and unfortunately Pat has just died this past year.
Right, yeah.
She was a very prime mover in awareness of elephants, and she had been a former animal trainer in her early days, and she saw the light, and she just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, she was an amazing woman. She was a guest on the show a couple times, and I went out to Paws once or twice, and what was interesting, in fact, the last time she was on the show, I said something kind of a little bit disparaging about zoos relative to elephants, and kind of to my surprise, but I later understood as she explained it, she kind of scolded me just because it seemed like it was a little too, I guess from her standpoint, a little too glib to just dismiss zoos out of hand, as much as she was obviously totally devoted to elephants. So I found that interesting, but I think...
Well, I did a documentary, I participated in making a documentary about elephants last year, Apology to Elephants, and which I narrated. And Pat, when we interviewed Pat extensively, that's one of the statements that she made. She said, you know, circuses can't be fixed, but zoos can.
Which was really interesting in light of what we just spoke about in terms of the AZA standards and the space that is typically allotted for elephants. But yeah, I mean, she knew more about elephants and captive elephants than just about anybody. So, you know, clearly wanted to.
I don't know how you're going to, I mean, I don't know what her exact tenets are for fixing those zoos. But, you know, there are better zoos and worser zoos. So.
Right. Well, and in fact, where you grew up, Michigan.
Yeah, Detroit closed.
Yeah, that guy said, you know what, in good conscience, I really, knowing what I know about elephants in captivity, I can't display them, as much as, of course, it does help ticket sales, et cetera. So, I mean, he was sort of a kind of a maverick in that way, and still is for the most part. So let me just let folks know, this is Talking Animals. My guest is Lily Tomlin, who will be performing tomorrow night at the Tampa Theater. And since we mentioned West Palm Beach, she'll also be, if you're listening online or otherwise, at the Kravis Center tonight. And we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. So yeah, you mentioned the documentary, which of course I wanted to discuss with you. So how did things move exactly from what you learned in preparation for writing that letter all about elephants and elephants and zoos? How did things move from there to next thing you know, you're narrating and helping produce this HBO documentary, An Apology to Elephants?
It was just part of moving forward in that that desire to bring awareness and consciousness to the issue. And I went to HBO and suggested that they do a documentary on elephants. That was the result of it.
But, I mean, that's back to what I was saying a moment or two ago about asking about when you started speaking out. I mean, that, to me, is the great thing about being in the public eye, as much as I'm sure there's things aren't great about it, but, I mean, having a career like yours. But, I mean, the fact that you can go into HBO and say, hey, this needs to be done. And because, you know, you're Lily Tomlin and you have the track record you have and the respect that you have, they say, you know what, let's do it.
Well, I can't, you know, it doesn't happen that easily. It's not like I could just do that at a whim. I just happened to hit the right moment.
Sure. But I just mean, if I walked into HBO's office and had the same conversation, they'd say, hey, how did you get past security or whatever? It wouldn't be like, you know, so.
You're right. You're people who have profile, of course. That's one of the benefits.
Well, let's take, we got people calling and emailing, not surprising. Let's at least take one of our callers now. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Lily Tomlin.
Hi. Well, first of all, I just want to say that I saw Lily perform in Toronto many, many years ago, and one of the skits was a bag lady with Post-it notes all over her body so as to remember things. And I can tell you, at my age now, I think of that image very often.
Oh, that's good.
Anyhow.
I'm with you.
Yes, I did see you in Toronto, and I was one of the people advocating for the move of the Toronto elephants to Paws, as I know you were, and so many others. And the one thing that really shocked me through it was the incredible, I mean, hostility and nastiness that we, you know, received both from the general public and from the zoo supporters. And I think as a, you know, absolutely well-known performer you are, you must receive the same kind of response sometimes?
Well, sure. People write letters on the internet, but you get so much support too. I mean, there are so many like-minded people. But naturally, you get letters, less than kind letters about what you're doing and why are you doing it, and with all the other problems in the world, why are you focusing on this and that kind of thing? Which it can be discouraging, but not.
Yes, like with elephants, we very often got, what about all those elephants being poached in Africa? Well, you know, that International March for Elephants that happened, 45 cities?
Yeah.
Three zoos openly participated. And that really shocked me, because we are, really working hard to stop that. And it was just another one of, you know, the responses that really I didn't expect as much. So.
No, I'm sure you didn't.
All right, well, we're gonna move on. I'm sorry, we just have very little time, but I appreciate your call. Thank you so much for calling. Okay,
bye bye
now. So Lily, what beyond what you kind of studied? Because I think what you've done and how you've spoken, and even as you sort of explained to our caller, sort of fielded some unpleasant response along the way. I mean, you must have felt something or seen something about elephants that prompted you to act and act repeatedly. So what do you see in elephants? What enchants you about them?
Well, the incredible, unique physicality of them in this time. I mean, there were creatures larger in the past, but I don't know if there's been any so magnificent. And it's just reading about their grieving and their emotional life and how sensitive and aware they seem to be. But I feel that about all animals. But it certainly is documented about elephants and known and studied and attested to by experts, elephant experts. The grieving is really profound.
Yeah, just their whole emotional complexity is pretty striking.
And the idea that they could just crush anybody who's abusing them, and the fact that they are stoic and for so long, and of course they will break and do things and attack and take revenge on abusers or people that they identify as abusers. So the years and years of labor, suffering. But again, as I say, it's more like the being symbolic, being so large and so obvious. In their needs for movement and space. It'd be like living in a closet yourself for 30, 40, 50 years. People who are elephants who are captive in a small zoo space with the earth compacted, so it's almost like cement, and their feet are very nimble and sensitive, really, and they can't really, they're used to walking and ambulating and using and being on a soft surface, grass and dirt and. Anyway, it's so obvious to me. As I said, it became so symbolic of the suffering in the world in general, and at the hands of humans, and that desire. And forget about the ivory trade. I mean, that's really what's decimating the elephant population, rhino too.
Yeah, no, the fairly recent surge in those trades is really dramatic in the impact it's had on the elephant population, and of course rhinos too. At least one more species
and the big cats too. We're going to lose big cat. I mean,
well, so Lily, I mean,
to me, it's transposed to humans. I mean, if you can be so abusive of small, like cats and dogs and other small animals that are not really cared for and just disposed of like so much trash, it just transposed to humans.
Right. Well, I think there's a lot of us who would say that the whole issue of rights for all creatures is on a continuum.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. So,
kind of sensitivity.
Right.
If you don't learn it or experience it, or it's not reinforced in children and that caring about other creatures, it's just it spreads into the culture.
No, for sure. Well, one other thing on the elephant thing, and then I want to talk a little bit about comedy and showbiz and shows and stuff. But since you obviously have the clout to get an important documentary made, I just want to say that, again, I obviously have a shared passion for elephants, but one of the things that's particularly galling to me and has been for a lot of years is what happens in circuses, particularly Ringling Brothers. So The documentary I want to see and may ultimately try to make, depending on whose help I can recruit, would basically boil down to Blackfish about Ringling Brothers.
I know. That's been such an important documentary.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised. Well, there's so much evidence of just brutality, outright cruelty. And how do you make that happen? It seems like it's everywhere. It's on the, you know, there is footage.
Right. I think just somebody that's really a good filmmaker, much like Gabriella Capworthwaite was with Blackfish, needs to put it together and put it together not necessarily in any kind of shrill, you know, way, which is part of, I think, the appeal and impact of Blackfish, is that she came in, as she explained on this show, as a fan of SeaWorld and took her kids there and had no idea and said, you know, if I wanted to be an animal captivity, I'd probably want to be an orca at the Shamu thing. She doesn't think that now, but I mean, she went on this whole sort of discovery, and the film, I think, really reflects that. And so I think if you could try that with the Ring, like you say, all the footage is there, all the information is there. But the key now is that people are really seeing what goes on at SeaWorld that they never, ever would have, especially on CNN and Netflix. So anyway, that's my hope, is to get to that kind of film at some point. But anyways,
I'm glad to know that. That gives that. Anyway, I'll bear that in my mind for a long time.
Yes. Not only that, I hope you'll be helping me pitch this at some point soon.
No, but, that's what I meant.
Yeah, okay, good. So this is Talking Animals. We're just sort of in our final moments of speaking with Lily Tomlin, who, again, will be performing tomorrow night at the Tampa Theater. And if you happen to be in the West Palm Beach area, she's at the Kravis Center tonight. And we have just a minute or two left. But if you want to quickly join the conversation, call 813-239-9663, email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text 813-433-0885. So let's spend a moment talking about those live shows you're doing at the moment. So you're, again, at the Kravis Center tonight, Tampa Theater tomorrow night. What happens in these shows? What are you doing these days in these shows?
Well, it's sort of been my version of stand-up that I've always done. I mean, from the time I was able to do that, because I was well-known. And it's always character-based. I do 10 or 12 characters, and I use multimedia mostly to poke fun at myself, but maybe to extend a character, to interact with the video, and try to talk about, like tonight I'll try to talk about West Palm Beach and all the kinds of things we're talking about now, and just life on spaceship Earth for all of us. And it's informal because it is like stand up and talking out to the audience.
Sure.
But I always like to think of it's so ironic because I think of the stage as more filmic than not, because if you can take the audience with you, you can cut to anything, cut, you know, as long as the audience doesn't get lost and they can follow what I'm doing and what I'm saying and where I'm going.
No, absolutely. And I'm sure they go everywhere. You know, I of course posted on Facebook about today's interview once or twice, and it's been really interesting to see how people respond. Lots and lots of Ernestine references, Edith Ann, and then assorted mentions of all kinds of other roles, from The West Wing to Tea with Mussolini. So it's really striking. I mean, there's a sort of a collection. I mean, Ernestine really seems to register.
Well, she's like a monster. She's a dominant personality, very dominant.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Even now, she's had a lot of jobs since the divestiture. She had a webcast chat show for a while. Called Ernestine Calls You on it, and you better have an answer. Did that mostly during the Bush administration.
Right.
But now she works at a big healthcare insurance corp denying healthcare to everyone.
Yeah. Well,
she goes where the power is.
Yeah. As long as she can deny it, I'm sure that's a good gig for her. So so let's just try to squeeze in one last quick call. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Lily Tomlin. Just a very quick call or a comment or question, if you would, please.
Good morning. My name is Judy Lane, and I have kind of a silly question, but hey, I wanted to pose a question to Lily Tomlin. So,
okay, Judy,
fire away.
What is better, cats or dogs?
Oh no, I couldn't say such a thing. I mean, I've had cats and dogs always. You know, nothing's greater than to have. I could have 15 dogs. I like to see a little dog, but I don't. I mean, I like so many breeds and so many kinds of dogs and looks of dogs and. and kitties too. I mean, my friend Paula Poundstone, the comic, she has 17. Oh, I probably shouldn't even tell that. Damn it.
That's okay. She was 16 when last time she was on this show. So up one, but I don't think she's trying to hide the numbers anymore. Yeah. So. But Judy, thank you so much for your call.
And when you go to her house, they have so many perches and levels and things around the walls, and I'm surprised they haven't devised something yet for them to be on the ceiling. But anyway, there's just something so great about animals. I'm mad for my animals, and I really, truly, I don't think if people don't absolutely cultivate and love their dogs and their cats, even little hamsters. And my friend Rachel Rosenthal, the performance artist, always had rats. And she did a wonderful book about one of her rats, Toddy Waddles. And he was so adorable.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. We all gravitate towards one or more animals. And so whether it's
I can enjoy all of them. I don't know. I probably even think I could like a ferret.
Well, there you go. Because we had one of our emailers. We're sort of out of time now, but one of our emailers asked what your favorite animal was. And it sounds like, again, you'd be hard pressed to say that you like them all.
Well, you couldn't. Yeah. How could you? They're also, they're just like individuals. And
yeah.
They just are. They just are like other. They're like, they have their own emotional and their own intelligence and their own little habits, and become enamored of them.
For sure. Well, Lily, I think we have just about reached the end of our time, but I just want to quickly mention, we didn't get a chance to chat about it, but people can be on the lookout for your Netflix series with Jane Fonda, Grace, and Frankie. And more immediately, people can be lookout for you at Kravis Center tonight in West Palm Beach and the Tampa Theater tomorrow night. So again, this has been Lily Tomlin, and she has, of course, a great website, lilytomlin.com, and she's on Facebook with Jane.
Can I mention one other thing?
Please.
You know, there's the whole idea of breeding elephants in captivity, too, is coming more and more to the front because of there's just that desire to increase that that zoo population and the way they gather semen from elephants. So that's something I'm sort of looking into, just because of that's kind of a brutal process in itself, but also just the idea of breeding more baby elephants into this this lifestyle.
Well, and back to my pending documentary about Ringling Brothers, you know, one of the things that I find just, you know, among a zillion extra galling is their Elephant Conservation Center,
which
is just, of course, to freshly stock the touring units, but they make it sound like it's a great conservation effort, and the same idea. Giving birth
PR
to all, yeah,
really bad.
Yeah. So, Lily, well, thank you again so much for making the time to join us in Talking Animals. We'll look for one of the shows tomorrow night or tonight, and of course, we'll look for the Netflix show and anything else that's coming along. And thank you very, very much for all you've done for animals and showbiz.
Okay, thank you, Duncan.
Thanks a lot, Lily. Bye bye now. All right, in just a few minutes, we'll speak briefly with Ken D'Onofrio of the Animal Coalition of Tampa, which is holding its big fundraising dinner Saturday night. Right now, though, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. Wanted to do something from Mitch Hedberg to acknowledge the anniversary, the passing of this singular comedian. Anniversary of his passing 9 years ago. Anyway, so this is Mitch Hedberg with part of a piece called Smacky the Frog on Talking Animals.
I went to England to tell jokes. I wanted to do Smokey the Bear joke in England, so I had to ask the English if they know who Smokey the Bear was, but they don't. Because in England, Smokey the Bear is not the forest fire prevention representative. They have Smacky the Frog. It's just like a bear, but it's a frog. I think that's a better system. I think we should adopt it. Because bears can be mean. But frogs are always cool. Like, never has there been a frog hopping toward me, and I thought, man, I better play dead. Here comes that frog. I've never said, here comes that frog in a nervous manner. It's always like optimistic. Hey, here comes that frog. All right. Maybe he will settle near me, and I can pet him and put him in a mayonnaise jar with a stick and a leaf. To recreate what he's used to. I certainly have to punch some holes in the lid because he's damn sure used to air. Then I can observe him. And he won't be doing much in his 16-ounce world.
All right. right. That was Mitch Hedberg, the late, great Mitch Hedberg, with part of a piece called Smacky the Frog, taken from his album Strategic Grill Locations. Moving now to hear about the Animal Coalition of Tampa's fundraising dinner Saturday night and an important milestone they recently reached. Let's welcome Ken D'Onofrio to Talking Animals. Good morning, Ken.
Hey, Duncan. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals. Let's jump right in. We've talked a lot about the Animal Coalition of Tampa on the show over the years, but let's, at least in 25 words or less, see if you could just kind of quickly describe what it is and what it does.
All right. It's our 7th annual Spaghetti. Oh, you mean, I'm sorry, you mean the Animal Coalition.
Yeah, well, just a quick, before we get into the Saturday night thing, I just thought, just to give a little context for people who may not be familiar with ACT.
Absolutely. As you know, Linda and Frank Hamilton founded the Animal Coalition several years ago, and basically they opened a clinic in 2006 to provide affordable spay-neuter services for pretty much the total Tampa community, with the mission to end euthanasia as a means of population control, because we have so many animals going into the local shelters, and this was a way for them to make sure that the killing stopped and to reduce that. And just like Lily Tomlin said, they're basically for the animals and trying to save lives. And
cool.
Spaghetti is the way they have been raising money. One of the two major fundraisers, of course, you know about Stride for Strays in October. But Spaghetti is a way that they originally thanked a lot of the volunteers and people who helped with their vision and their mission, and basically has a funny name, obviously, Spaghetti No Balls. It's a dinner and a silent auction. We're returning to the Yuengling Brewery Beer Garden. We had a very successful event last year, and this year we're doing it again. We've got, obviously, a great dinner. There will be no meatballs, but there is an awesome spaghetti dinner and a silent auction. And this year we have our first ever live auction where the winning bidder is going to take away a VIP Tampa Bay Rays experience for four. It's like a $750 value. So that, along with silent auction items like iPad minis, GoPro wearable cameras, we even have Red Lobster has come in and put together some premium gift baskets for us. But really, we can't thank the community enough for all their support over the years to help us with our mission. And the Spaghetti No Balls, obviously, we have sponsors, great sponsors like Pet Supermarket, Bright House, Leaf Subaru. They've all come together to help us make this one of the best Spaghetti No Balls dinners ever. And again, it's this Saturday night at between 5 and 9 p.m. You can get your tickets online at our website, actampa.org, or we have a special website, 2014spaghetti.org. That's SPAYGETTY.org.
Well, great. You just answered a couple of my questions, which is where people could find it online, because it's not too late to get in on this. And if people want to go and get their tickets, sounds like those are the two websites they would use. And we're just about out of our time, Ken, but why don't you briefly hit the milestone that I alluded to in introducing you?
Yeah, I have to be honest with you. We were pretty excited and blown away that we were reaching our 8th year of the clinic being open, and we started to realize that we were also reaching our 80,000th spay-neuter operation, and it actually happened last Monday. The Cologne family came in with their little darling dog, Princess, who was a Shih Tzu, 10-month-old Shih Tzu, and they were the lucky 80,000th surgery. So we will be having a special presentation Saturday night at Spaghetti No Balls at the brewery, and they will be the recipient of some special gifts, including a $100 gift certificate. So
that's so awesome. Well, congratulations to you guys. 80,000 spay-neuter procedures. I mean, just the implications of that, just the actual numbers are staggering, but the implications, of course, are even more staggering. So, so Ken, thank you so much. Again, we've been speaking with Ken D'Onofrio from Animal Coalition of Tampa, and again, for more information about what they do, and of course, Saturday night's big extravaganza, you can go to actampa.org. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye now. All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Amos Lee at Ruth Eckert Hall Saturday. Because the show is this Saturday, not really enough time to put the tickets in the mail and make sure that you got them. We do ask that you be able to pick them up if you do try to win them today. We'll get to all that in a moment here on Talk Animals, but we're going to hit a truncated version of animal news and announcements, including this major ruling for those of us who care about whales. The United Nations' highest court ruled Monday that Japan's Antarctic whaling operations are not for quote-unquote scientific purposes, as Tokyo claims, and ordered an immediate halt to the practice. There's more information about that since we're cutting it short today, but a good report about this in the New York Times and elsewhere, a great op-ed about it actually in the New York Times as well. So good, good, good. Don't usually take my information from TMC, but want to briefly report that former NASCAR driver Leilani Munter will be taking her Blackfish car to Talladega. It's a TMZ exclusive, at least initially, but this is all thanks to a generous donation from Simpsons co-creator Sam Simon. And she had been trying to raise money to pay for the, I think, $115,000 fee to enter in the race. And she was on his radio show, and she was really he was really taken with her and paid the balance. So she's in. And again, Sam Simon, who folks might remember was on the show a few years back and unfortunately has terminal colon cancer, but has vowed to give away his fortune, made, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars on The Simpsons before he dies, specifically towards animal rights and feeding the hungry. So another amazing gesture by Sam Simon. Let's see. I think that's all we're probably going to have time for. Although, speaking of the cool things by animal organizations that we can't really describe the price of, but I just want to quickly mention, this Sunday, April 6th, the Humane Society of Tampa Bay has an incredible deal, let's put it that way, on shots and microchips for dogs and cats from 8 a.m. to noon at the Humane Society of Tampa Bay at 3607 North Armenia Avenue. So there'll be standard vaccinations, microchips, and Hillsborough County Animal Services will also be on hand to offer licenses. Also at an incredibly good rate if you get my drift. So anyways, more information can be had at humanesocietytampa.org. That's all we really have time for. So let's step quickly into Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member, although we certainly encourage you to become one. And there'll be a prize. Again, a pair of tickets to see Amos Lee at Ruth Eckert Hall, provided that you, again, are able to come pick them up for Saturday's show since there's not enough time to pop them in the mail. So to the first person who calls 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, it's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. All right, we'll take those guesses off the air. We have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. Back next Wednesday, April 9th, when my guest will be Don Goldstein of Greyhound Rescue and Adoptions of Tampa Bay, or GREAT, pegged to April being a National Adopt-a-Greyhound Month. And we'll speak about the pertinent issues, of course, greyhound adoption, but also a dramatic number of dog deaths at tracks in the last year or so and pending legislation that deals with that, including decoupling. Hope you'll join us for that. I hope you'll also go to talkinganimals.net, links to Facebook, Twitter, information, archives, and podcasts of past programs. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to find out about our guests a couple of days beforehand. And that's all at talkinganimals.net. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening.